The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. The Wellness Community and Gilda's Club have united to become the Cancer Support Community, one of the largest providers of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are offered at over 170 locations worldwide and online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. Our show today is being brought to you in part by Eisai, Genentech, and Amgen. We talk a lot on our show about the cancer experience and certainly talk a lot about that topic here at the Cancer Support Community. This is something we and others have been working hard to improve for the millions of people living with cancer today, a term that's been buzzing around in conversation in the news a lot lately is the term palliative care, or as it is sometimes called, supportive care. On today's show, we have three great experts here to explain what palliative care is and what kind of impact it is having. Today, we have with us Rebecca Kirsch, Director of Quality of Life and Survivorship in Cancer Control at the American Cancer Society. Rebecca is responsible for working collaboratively to provide strategic direction, input, and insight to bridge the society's survivorship-related research, policy, and program initiatives. Rebecca also serves as a quality cancer care knowledge expert for the Society's advocacy initiatives and activities to improve quality of life and reduce suffering for patients, survivors, and caregivers. Thanks for being here, Rebecca.
Thank you, Kim.
We also have with us Tom Keene, President and CEO of Sea Change, an organization that assembles key cancer leaders from three sectors, private, public, and not-for-profit, and from across the cancer continuum, prevention, early detection, treatment, and quality of life, to work towards the mission to eliminate cancer as a major public health problem at the earliest possible time by leveraging the expertise and resources of its unique multi-sector membership. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
And last but not least, we have Selma Schimmel, Chief Executive Officer and founder of Vital Options International, a Southern California-headquartered and internationally focused not-for-profit cancer communications organization with the mission to facilitate a global cancer dialogue. Selma is a passionate voice helping patients understand their clinical options and translating new research into hope and possibilities. Hi, Selma.
Hi, Kim.
Rebecca, I'm going to start with you to get us started in the conversation. Let's start with some basic terms, definitions. Can you tell our listeners exactly what palliative care is?
Sure. That's the most important beginning. And palliative care is what focuses on relieving the pain, symptoms, and stress of cancer and its treatment to improve the quality of life for both patients and their families. It uses a team-based approach that provides an extra layer of support addressing the patient's and family's quality of life priorities and concerns. It assists with communication and coordination across what can be many care settings throughout a cancer experience. And it helps give patients, survivors, and their families a voice in determining the medical care that is most right for them.
Is there, Rebecca, a correct time or a diagnosed time when palliative care should be incorporated into cancer care or the cancer experience?
You know, palliative care is really appropriate at any age and any stage of disease, and it should be provided quite early, right alongside cancer treatment from the beginning, from the get-go, starting at that point of diagnosis and continuing as needed throughout the cancer experience and into long-term survivorship.
So, Selma, I know when some folks hear the term, you know, palliative care, we talk about this, you know, idea of symptom management, that some people in their minds immediately go to, oh, well, this must be, you know, hospice care, making people comfortable when there are maybe no other options. What's the difference between palliative care and hospice care so we can kind of set the record straight on that?
Yeah, I think the common perception is when you say palliative care, you immediately think of end-of-life care. But hospice care is under this umbrella of palliative care, which is quality of life care, and it may lead to hospice care. But the goal of palliative care doesn't initiate at end of life, which is where hospice care would kick in.
So let's drill down a little bit more, Selma. What are some of the issues that palliative care might address?
It can be pain management, it could be nutritional needs, it could be spiritual needs. It really focuses on providing patients with relief from the symptoms of pain and the stress of serious illness. Whatever the diagnosis is, it's what you've already heard. The goal is to improve quality of life for patients, for their families. It is a team approach at any stage of one's disease, and as you've already heard, it provides that extra layer of support. It's appropriate at any age, and it can be provided along with curative treatment. The medical oncologist and the oncology nurse will do their best, but time is limited. And so it is the specialty of palliative care that helps to connect all the dots in the continuum of patient care.
You know, Tom, I want to pull you into the conversation here and get your take. You know, what are some of the benefits, of palliative care? How are we starting to see palliative care sort of integrated and adopted? And why are organizations like your organization, SeaChange, so supportive of it and really speaking out about it?
Yeah, well, thanks, Kim, for allowing us to participate here on this issue. You know, LaSalle LaFall, noted cancer surgeon and one of our founding members, was always quick to keep pointing out to us that the patient should always be the object of our affection. And that's one reason why we're really supportive of this palliative care effort, because it puts a patient's quality of life right at the forefront of our thinking. It provides an opportunity for patients to actually achieve the best quality of life they can, even though they're facing this major health issue that we call cancer. You've already heard some of the things that patients benefit from in terms of the direct patient benefit and managing their symptoms, et cetera. But I think it's also important to note that it helps bolster patients' strength to carry on with daily life. It improves their ability to tolerate medical treatments. It also helps patients have more control over their care by improving communication between doctors and the healthcare team and the patients and loved ones. And I think this issue of this communications is really critical as a part of this. It's not just the services provided. It's providing that connection and a better connection between patients and their loved ones and the healthcare team.
So, Tom, we're hearing from you guys, I think, this sort of theme of, you know, this is something that needs to be integrated. It needs to be something that we, you know, talk about from the beginning of the diagnosis. Has it not been integrated up to this point? I mean, is it something that's been, you know, sort of, okay, we have no more treatment for folks, let's send them down the hall, you know, to palliative care? I mean, is this a new idea, the way that we're talking about this and framing this?
Well, I don't think the idea of actually managing patients' needs and symptoms, et cetera, is new. I think what's different here is we have a specialty area that has emerged in which oncologists connect now with a whole new array of clinical care providers that can actually help manage the patients so that oncologists do what oncologists do best, which is take care of the cancer, and others take care of some of these conditions. I think just as an example of this, many cancer patients also have other conditions for which they're suffering from. For the palliative care specialist, you have that opportunity, for example, to to have that person being looked at as a whole patient, not just as a cancer patient. And I think that's the benefit of everybody, the oncologist and the patient.
Rebecca, can you chime in on that as well? I mean, why are we suddenly talking about this thing called palliative care? As Tom said, you know, we've been tending to the symptoms and side effects, you know, of cancer patients for you know, for many years. So why are we in this interesting conversation with this new term, palliative care, trying to get it in, you know, incorporated into patient management and the cancer experience from the beginning? What's our shift here?
Well, one of the big shifts is the focus on quality of life. That's really important to patients and families, as Tom said, is our true north. They really are where we start. And we know that with cancer, the treatments are quite toxic and can have a long-lasting burden even after they're done, that we're really trying to address in this more whole person-oriented way. And so palliative care is part of the formula that helps deliver that whole person and goal-directed care that everyone knows is now better medicine.
Selma, are we hearing, are doctors offering this to patients? Are patients starting to ask for it? Obviously, we're trying to kind of raise the bar here today and raise awareness on this important topic, but are you starting to see this getting integrated into the patient-physician dialogue?
You know, if a patient is treated at a cancer center, hopefully there's going to be a palliative care service available, but over 80% of patients are treated in the community. And it's a real dilemma in the private sector, because if you were to Google palliative care, you will probably land up at a hospice care organization. And it's much more challenging within the community to find a palliative care specialist, and part of it is that the general perception of when you still say palliative care, it's still tied to end of life. So the first thing we have to do is redefine our understanding of what palliative care is. There's another challenge, and I know it's difficult sometimes for physicians to sort of themselves, since while palliative care has been out there, the idea of integrating it into practice, we're still struggling with that. And so if a patient goes to a physician to say, I'd like a palliative care referral, there still may be a lapse in the ability to bring that specialist. We don't have that many palliative care specialists out there. So this is a challenge. And it's also a slippery slope, because oncologists will say, well, I know how to give palliative care. I know how to do pain management. But it's not only. It's much more than a prescription.
Much more than that. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're talking about palliative care and really managing a patient's symptoms throughout the course of the diagnosis, from diagnosis throughout care. There's a lot of learning to be done. We're on a real learning curve about what palliative care is and why it's important for all patients to understand it and have access to it. We have three great guests with us on the show today. We have a lot to cover. We're going to take a quick break here. Don't go away. We will be right back.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia, Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals@home.com. or call 617-733-5848.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, AZI, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Speaking about cancer, I'm Kim Tibaldo, and today's show is being brought to you in part by Celgene, Lilly Oncology, and Onyx. We're talking about palliative care today with three experts. As we've just learned, palliative care is not the same as hospice care. It should be implemented alongside cancer treatments and has some pretty significant benefits. In this next segment, we really want to drill down a little bit and talk more about what to expect when you're being offered or ask for palliative care to manage your cancer experience. Rebecca, we talked about the fact that that this is really the treatment of any cancer patient is really a multidisciplinary team. But who are these palliative care experts that we're talking about? Who are the professionals that make up the palliative care team?
Well, first and foremost, I would say that the oncology team, as was brought up in the first segment, they can provide palliative care as part of cancer treatment to help reduce symptoms and side effects. And then in addition to that oncology care, those oncology team members or other doctors, whether they're a family practitioner, an internist, or a pediatrician, they may also request assistance from the specialized palliative care service team. And they'd work in partnership with the oncology team and the other doctors to provide that expert symptom management, that extra time that's needed for communication that we've talked about, and the dedicated help in navigating through the healthcare system. So the core palliative care team, it might include specialty trained doctors, nurses, chaplains or spiritual counselors, and social workers. And then on top of that, we may have also pharmacists, nutritionists, massage therapists, child health specialists, and others that might be part of that interdisciplinary team.
And are those mainly folks, Rebecca, that the patient's going to encounter or interact with at the hospital or in the oncology practice? I mean, can you receive palliative care services at home, some of the things we're talking about?
The miracle answer is yes. Palliative care teams do home visits. But the important element here is making sure that these teams are available for that consultation. Increasingly, it's becoming part of the comprehensive cancer care services that are provided to patients and survivors. But as Selma mentioned, we don't have those teams available in the numbers we need across the land. And that's where oncology teams need to also stretch their muscle to have some of these palliative care skills to draw out of their belt to help patients deal with their symptoms and side effects. Mm-hmm. But where these teams are available, home-based visits are part of the services that palliative care teams may provide.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. So, Selma, let's get down to some brass tacks here. What are we talking about here? Do you say to your doctor, you know, I want palliative care, or is there a palliative care team here? I mean, I know one of the things that I hear sometimes, Selma, is that, you know, patient gets very attached to their oncologist, and again, like as you said, there's sort of this misperception that palliative care is hospice care, and folks might have some anxiety from, you know, separating from their oncologist, and I think that's why this idea of this being incorporated as part of care, you know, is so important. But how does the patient start this conversation?
Well, you know, the great thing would be is if within the clinical setting, the conversation is initiated early on, so the patient isn't the one that has to initiate it. One of the goals of the American Society for Clinical Oncology, ASCO, is to bring the palliative care discussion into the doctor-patient dialogue much earlier, and that's a current goal, because then it becomes a natural part of the discussion. I wish I could say that most patients would understand when it's time to bring up the question. But the first thing we have to do is help patients understand the necessity and the value of mm-hmm. what truly integrative medicine is, which is what palliative care brings to them. That said, part of the dilemma is a patient will go to the doctor and say, I'm experiencing pain. And I'm using pain as an example. It could be depression. It could be nutrition. It could be any number. It could be an existential crisis, whatever it may be. But it puts the patient then in the position of having to go to the doctor saying, I'm experiencing this. And then the hope that the doctor, addressing pain is one thing. How to really sustain proper pain management is quite another. And so I think that you raise a pivotal question as to the onus of responsibility. What does it really even mean psychologically when the patient has to be the one to go to the doctor saying, I think I need palliative care? By the time the patient may go to the doctor asking for more intensified supportive care, there may be a lot more going on with the patient than if we would have been able to have addressed it sooner in the process.
And Tom, what about, I mean, we always talk about this idea that cancer is a family disease. Cancer doesn't just affect the individual, but affects everyone around that individual. Where do the caregivers, fall out in all of this? Can caregivers be advocates for palliative care? Does the caregiver in some way, you know, benefit from the integration of palliative care? I'm hoping that there are some caregivers out there, listening today who may also benefit from our conversation.
Well, I'm really glad, Kim, you brought the caregiver into this. I mean, it is a family issue, or not a family issue, certainly one between loved ones or other friends who help take care of cancer patients as they're going through their experience. Now, I think one thing that we ought to keep in mind here, though, is that patients, when they're told they have cancer, suddenly encounter this new and very frightening kind of role that they're completely unprepared for. Well, the same thing happens with caregivers. They're suddenly thrust into roles they never knew about, never expected, et cetera. And so I think one part of this is not just that they benefit from palliative care the patient receives. And there is that, because as patients do better, caregivers also do better because they see this patient is progressing and doing better under certain circumstances, or they're getting palliative care services. But if we integrate the caregiver into being a part of the healthcare team, what actually happens then is better communication between the caregiver and the patient, and it also increases the ability to have a partner now to integrate with the healthcare system and to better navigate through that healthcare system. So I think if we think about this, we have to look at caregivers and recognize that in this new role, they're also being weighed upon. Their lives have been turned upside down as well as the patient's. But the benefit of palliative care is to take into consideration just as much the interaction between the patient and the caregiver is a part of the service as well.
I think that's so important, and we see caregivers really becoming advocates. So I think raising that educational level around palliative care for the caregivers is just as important as it is in having this discussion, with our patients. I want to ask each of you. So Rebecca, I want to start with you first. I want you to For folks who may just be joining us, we're talking today about palliative care and what it means and how you get it, who's paying for it. We're going to get to that piece of the conversation. But, Rebecca, if you can, number one, just tell folks again what palliative care is, because I think you had a really good definition that I think will help folks understand what we're talking about. And then I want to ask each of you, are there places where folks can go to learn more about palliative care, the palliative care experience, and again, tips that you may have for our listeners in terms of how to really initiate this conversation with the doctor, with the healthcare team. Can I start with you, Rebecca?
Sure. Getting back to what is palliative care, it focuses on relieving the pain, symptoms, and stress of cancer and its treatment to help improve the quality of life for patients and the family and caregivers. It uses a team-based approach that provides an extra layer of support that addresses the patient's and family's quality of life priorities and concerns, helps with communication and coordination across the multiple care centers, settings where cancer patients face their care, and helps give patients, survivors, and their families a voice in determining both their values and the medical care that aligns with those values that's right for them. In terms of resources available where people can start to go to learn more, the first place to start is asking about palliative care at your cancer center, as we've talked about here. In addition, there are many resources available online. The American Cancer Society has introductory information on palliative care on its website, and there are also other helpful online resources, such as at www.getpalliativecare.org.
Excellent, excellent. Selma, some thoughts about where patients can go to learn more, or some tips for how a patient raises this conversation with their oncologist, again, without this sort of, you know, fear that, oh, I'm going to be sent down to some other department down the hall or in the basement, and I don't want to be disconnected from my my kind of oncology team that I've gotten to know here.
Rebecca mentioned www.getpalliativecare.org. It's sponsored by the Center to Advance Palliative Care. It's an excellent website. They actually have a brochure that a patient can download, and for that first interaction with their physician, it's a wonderful tool. They can print that out. They can take with them. It's almost like a guide to how to communicate your needs about palliative care. You'll learn an awful lot there, getpalliativecare.org. I'd like to take an opportunity to say that the series that Vital Options is producing alongside Sea Change and ASCO really will help a lot of patients, sort of help demystify, let them meet palliative care specialists up close, and soon other patients up close at thegrouproom.tv if you click on the palliative care link. I think the more we can do to help patients learn and experience firsthand by speaking with other people and learning about the specialty of palliative care, it's going to help a lot shed a different light. I think it's that first fear of what does this mean, and then a huge relief that comes with knowing that you've just empowered yourself, that you've strengthened your core medical team. None of this is about trying to pull one away from their doctor. In fact, it frees your physician to be there for you in an even more comprehensive way. One can't be everything to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can help doctors feel secure, too, that they're not losing their patient, they're just building a stronger team to help mm-hmm. both their patient and themselves deliver the best quality care.
Outstanding advice, Selma. Tom, I've got about 30 seconds till our break here. Other thoughts to add? I think these are some great resources, getpalliativecare.org, and the work that you guys are doing with Vital Options and ASCO.
Well, you guys have some very good resources also at the cancer support community, but just a couple of others. The American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine also has good resources. Caring Connections, which is a program of the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, has excellent materials. And I'd also mention the National Palliative Care Research Center. All of those can be Googled in order to get websites for them.
Outstanding. Great advice from our panel today. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're going to take a quick break here. Don't go away. We have a lot more to cover, and we'll be right back.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help, but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar, to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit MealTrain.com/MMT. And enter the code MAGNOLIAB, or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Speaking about cancer, brought to you in part today by AstraZeneca, Millennium, and Purdue Pharma. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo, from the Cancer Support Community. Today we are here with three experts who are talking about palliative care, a growing movement in comprehensive cancer care today, and an important part of the cancer experience. In this next segment, I'd like to talk more about this sort of increased buzz around palliative care in recent years, and really where we see this going. Rebecca, according to information on your organization's website, the American Cancer Society's website, in the year 2000, there were only around 600 palliative care teams in U.S. hospitals. Today, we're seeing more than 1,600, a 148% increase. Again, for folks joining us, and just to anchor this, why are we seeing such an increased focus on this kind of supportive care? What does it mean to integrate palliative care, and what are the benefits? Obviously, we must be seeing some benefits to see an increase in the number of experts and the number of teams around the country.
Well, the numbers are soaring, Kim, and over the last decade in particular, and even more recently. And the biggest backdrop or reason for that is the science behind palliative care. It's shown us that people who receive it earlier in their cancer experience or other serious illness experience, they live much better. Their symptoms are controlled. Their depression is managed. Importantly as well, we've also seen studies showing that these folks may not just live better, they may also live longer. So there was a study in the last couple of years out of the Massachusetts General Hospital of lung cancer patients that showed that patients receiving usual cancer care plus palliative care from early on in their diagnosis and throughout their treatment, their symptoms were better managed, they had a better experience overall, but they also lived nearly 3 months longer. So that was a significant sea change for the field in terms of making the case that palliative care really does deliver the best quality medicine. I think that recognizing this notion of palliative care as just darn good medicine has really made the numbers of teens in hospitals rise over this last decade. Those who are more forward-looking hospitals and cancer centers now understand that palliative care sort of delivers that triple win. It's beneficial to the patient, it's beneficial to the physicians, and it's beneficial for the hospitals. So it delivers that triple aim trifecta that we talk about so often as essential to good quality care, better health, better care at lower cost. And I think that palliative care will be expected to rise even further as more of the public becomes aware of its benefits. This notion of better symptom control, better quality of life for patients and families, but also perhaps better survival. So our job, one, really, is to give patients and families the words to use to get this care that they very much need and want.
So, Tom, let's drill down a little bit more on some of the sort of the economic story that Rebecca has started to tell for us here, and what we know about the sort of economic impact of palliative care on society. Obviously, everybody's talking today about how we contain, how we lower healthcare costs in our country. What do we know about how palliative care affects cancer cost is part one of my question. And then part two, does insurance pay for palliative care, which I think is a really important topic to discuss for our listeners?
Sure. So I think this is really a perfect kind of a connection here between an opportunity in palliative care that not only benefits the patient, but also is going to benefit society economically. So first thing is costs of care are reduced, overall costs of care are reduced. For example, a recent Kaiser Permanente program with home-based palliative care showed a cut in costs, overall costs, by 67%. We also know that palliative care decreases the use of aggressive and ineffective, and I might add costly, treatments. Readmissions are reduced, and readmissions are a big deal in terms of overall cost of care generally, not just in cancer care. Inpatient palliative care also reduces costs. For example, Medicaid patients who receive palliative care in a study that was done in New York averaged $6,900 less in hospital costs during a given admission. And palliative care also decreases length of stay, especially in intensive care units. That reduces costs. And there are just a whole series of data that are now coming out showing how palliative care impacts costs. Now, the question of insurance and how we pay for it is another story. And I think it's an important story to tell. So first of all, like any other coverage that we have for any of our health care, this is highly dependent on what kind of coverage you actually have. And, of course, as we're going through health reform and everything, some of these are still going to unfold. But generally speaking, most insurance plans cover all or part of the palliative care treatment services that you would receive from providers such as hospitals and hospices and others. So I think it's important to realize that many of these services are provided, but there isn't any defined benefit labeled palliative care in the same way that we have hospice care defined under Medicaid right now. Now, one thing that people can do, though, is because insurance is always confusing, always a problem, is look to other resources. And one source is the palliative care team itself to help an individual determine what their coverage actually has in it, and how that would apply to the services that might be being provided there. And I think in general also there are other resource organizations that can be helpful if people start running into economic issues around their insurance or just generally, and groups like the Patient Advocates Foundation are one of those.
So you really, I think it's important, as you said, that it's not going to be listed or coded as palliative care. You really need to drill down on your coverage and make some calls, ask some questions to make sure these services are covered. And I think it's the same advice we'd give if you're shopping for coverage through the Affordable Care Act, the new, some call it Obamacare, and shopping for coverage through the state exchanges. I'll just mention that the cancer support community has created a checklist for cancer patients, questions that they should ask when they're shopping for coverage through the exchanges to make sure these kinds of important services and other important services are included in the plans that they may be buying through the state exchanges. And so make sure folks know of that resource and if they want to put their hands on that. Selma, you mentioned an initiative that you're working on with SeaChange and ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Can you tell us more about that and other work that you're doing at Vital Options to communicate the importance of this topic and really educate and empower patients around palliative care?
You know, this is something I'm very passionate about. You know, I've experienced my own palliative care consult, and until I actually sat not only interviewing palliative care doctors, but actually sitting with one patient to doctor, I couldn't quite comprehend what a unique niche medical specialty palliative care really is. And these doctors come from multiple disciplines. Some are oncologists, some are psychiatrists, some are radiation oncologists, some are internal medicine doctors. So one really has to appreciate the landscape of what a palliative care specialist, what they bring to it from the variety of clinical specialties they may already come from. What we're trying to do between Vital Options, Sea Change, and ASCO is to really humanize the palliative care experience. We have a great start interviewing the key opinion leaders throughout the U.S. and Europe who can really teach and demonstrate palliative care. What is the specialty? Why are these physicians so passionate about this area of clinical intervention? But for patients, we really want to feature these vignettes, and we want to take real people and show you other lives and the journey to drive it home. And how we speak to someone with cancer is going to be very different than someone in the general public who has maybe not yet been touched by illness, and they're hearing about palliative care for the first time. There are cultural barriers and issues that we have to deal with, depending on what one's value systems are and culturally how they perceive illness and palliative care that, yes, could lead to end-of-life and hospice care down the road. And so our goal is to further develop the series to allow other advocate organizations, providers, patients, family members, and the general public direct access to educational materials and meeting other people who will sort of hold their hand and take them down a very personal journey.
And so is this something that where we have a launch date scheduled, Selma, something we should be looking for?
It's in progress now. If you go to thegrouproom.tv, there are 3 years' worth now, and the most recent at ASCO, at the ESMO meeting that just happened, a dialogue with physicians from all walks of life and why palliative care is so important. What's interesting is that we've now sat with advocate groups, and I think this is a huge opportunity for the cancer advocacy community to take an issue on, and that would be for collective organizations collectively to begin to address the issue of palliative care, because each one of our organizations has tremendous influence and reach to the patients and the family members that depend on us. So please, I encourage you to go to thegrouproom.tv and start looking at these videos. And they're free to disseminate and use, because I think the buzz and the real paradigm shift can come from the public and from patients and from family members. This is something we can really, really own and be a part of changing the quality of life for patients everywhere.
Great comments, Selma, and I appreciate you sharing about your own personal experience and what that was like for you, really on the front line, and bringing that into your own care planning with your own experience. This is Frankly Speaking about Cancer. We're talking about palliative care and really addressing and managing the symptoms, the side effects, the stress, the distress that folks go through when they're diagnosed with cancer. And there really is this emerging specialty area that we are pushing to make folks aware of, and to let them know that this really should be made available to you throughout your cancer experience. We're going to take a quick break here. Don't go away. We will be right back.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia, Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliamealsathome.com. or call 617-733-5848.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
I'm Kim Tibaldo, and this is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Our show today is being sponsored in part by McKesson's Giving Comfort Program, Bristol-Myers Squibb, and Morphotech. We've been talking about palliative care, and as our show inches towards our close here, I would like to help our listeners learn a little bit more about how they or someone they know can begin a palliative care plan. I want to, since you both come from three wonderful organizations that are important partners to the cancer support community, I'd actually like to ask each of you to just take a minute or two to tell our listeners about your organization, how folks can find your organization, and some of the things that you're doing to really advance this palliative care conversation, if you can take a minute or two to do that. Selma, let me start with you in Vital Options.
Well, you know, I started Vital Options when I had cancer in my 20s. I have had to walk the cancer walk for so many years now with more advanced ovarian cancer. My organization is dedicated to cancer communications and allowing to do just what we're doing with you today, which is to facilitate a global dialogue. And you can find us at vitaloptions.org and thegrouproom.tv, where all of our video content is housed. And Kim, before we go, I just want to let patients know that one of the great things about their palliative care specialist is also that they are fantastic navigators to help patients at any stage of their disease and family members sort of figure out where they need to go next. And having a navigator who's tuned in to your clinical issues is just a great gift.
It's fantastic. I think that's great advice, Selma. I appreciate you sharing that. Tom, leading a great organization, lots of good work happening there. Tell our listeners about Sea Change and the work you're doing on this front.
Well, palliative care is one of the six major strategic initiatives we have, and it's related to the whole concept of value in cancer care. Our organization was founded on the idea of if you could bring together leaders from the cancer community across all three sectors and across the full cancer spectrum, you could then bring a larger voice to many of the major issues that we need to have. So for us, the concept here is to bring the voices of our 160-plus members to the palliative care discussion. I think what's important is often when we have conversations in the U.S., we have conversations that are delivered by the people who know a particular topic and who always speak on it. The beauty of an organization like ours is it's not just the palliative care people who can speak to these issues. It's the people who come from other disciplines within the cancer care community to speak about it more broadly. And I think that lends an extra power to our voice. We're also very interested in the impact of palliative care and the ability to access palliative care services for populations with known cancer disparities. And that's a significant additional initiative of ours that ties in very closely with this one.
So fantastic. Great work there. Rebecca, I know that you guys at the American Cancer Society have really embraced this issue of palliative care. I know you've been sponsoring some of the research and that you have some advocacy and legislative efforts on the palliative care front as well. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Sure, Kim. So the American Cancer Society is actually celebrating its 100th birthday this year, and it's sort of a true delight to see that quality of life has become a prominent priority within the organization across the different arms of what we do. Through research, we've invested more than $23 million in the last 7 years dedicated specifically to palliative care and symptom management to help improve that quality of life for patients and families, adults and children alike, as well as our work on the ground on the front lines with staff and communities who are able to help patients and families, but also cancer centers and other health settings understand the resources that are available to promote palliative care earlier in the experience. And then our advocacy affiliate as well is advancing from the public policy side of the house the opportunity to make quality of life the rule, not the exception or the afterthought, so that all of this care focused on the pain, symptoms, and stress, which are as important as the disease treatment itself, become equal share priorities in terms of how medical care gets delivered. So this is a great opportunity, I think, for all of the cancer community together with other disease groups to come together. And our advocacy affiliate has actually built a new quality of life coalition to help advance this campaign that I think is an exciting new phase of what we all need to do to deliver better person-centered and goal-directed care.
So, Rebecca, I would imagine that many of our listeners, in fact, many folks out there today, when you say the expression hospice care, know what that is. But 30 years ago, people did not know what that was. It was a new idea. Folks really didn't understand it. It wasn't integrated. It wasn't paid for. Wasn't offered to folks. Are we on the same track with palliative care? Is that the idea that we want to move to a place where everybody knows and understands what palliative care is, that we teach folks how to ask for it, that it's paid for, that it's integrated, that it's valued as a part of navigating any cancer experience?
We sure do, Kim. We really want palliative care to become part of the daily vernacular of medical care and make it part and parcel of good quality medical care through research, through programs, through advocacy, through awareness. That's really mission critical to help everyone understand what it is, how to get it, how to ask for it, and how to talk about it.
Great. And I just want to mention the website that some of you mentioned, getpalliativecare.org. We are inching towards the end of our show here. But Selma, I'm going to ask you if you'll kind of help us towards our conclusion of our discussion here. Again, you've mentioned you've had your own experience with cancer over a number of years. I'd like to hear what advice, what tips you have for people who are listening today about how to start a discussion with their healthcare team about palliative care and really talking about the desire to have this integrated into your cancer care plan.
Well, I know that it might be very scary at first blush for someone to think about talking to their doctor about this as though it means their disease has progressed to a point where they need to sort of add what could sound on the surface like something very scary and intimidating. But in truth, when you think in terms of wanting to have the best quality of life and improve clinical outcomes by tolerating your therapy better and by connecting the dots, as I said before, then my advice is a heart-to-heart with yourself, as scary as it may sound, to be honest with yourself, sit with your loved ones, assess your situation with your family members. They are not oblivious to what's going on with you, and they're walking the walk with you. Have the consult together and be open to the idea that adding help to your clinical team may be actually transformative. It may open you up to possibilities and ideas and new innovations and support that you might not know about otherwise.
If I'm a family member, a loved one, a caregiver listening to the show today, how can I be an advocate for my loved one?
Family members sometimes feel like they walk on eggshells and they're really afraid. And I think that the relief, the gift that that palliative care consult brings to the whole family, it's huge, because you're all thinking the same thing. You're all worried about the same thing. And having that fragmented instead of unified, where people can work towards the same goal, can be a very lonely experience.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be that way.
This has been such a great conversation. I just want to thank our guests, Rebecca Kirsch from the American Cancer Society, Tom Keene from Sea Change, and Selma Schimmel from Vital Options International. It's been an amazing discussion about palliative care, and I certainly hope our listeners had some takeaways today, and I encourage you to visit these wonderful organizations to learn more. I also encourage you to visit our website at cancersupportcommunity.org to find our 57 affiliates around the country, online support groups, our helpline. We have a host of free services for people with all cancers and for their family members and loved ones. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time, be well, do well, live well.
Thank you for joining us for Frankly Speaking About Cancer with your host, Kim Tibaldo. We're here for you every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. In the meantime, stay connected online at cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org.